Track 1, Side 1, Damadero at Wat Pleng, the 26th of the September, 2518.
I like to think that we would give help when help is needed, but often we don't. Isn't that right? Or do we always give help when help is needed? We know from our own lives that we don't always give help when help is needed. We know it as a fact from our own experience. No idea, but we can talk about what we have done and what we haven't done. And we know that we haven't always given help when help is needed. We may have often thought that we would like to, but there sometimes it just seems to be something that holds us back, or it depends.
Did the Buddha say anything relevant to that situation?
He said he praised loving kindness and said that it was one of the highest abodes for men. To live, to abide in loving kindness, to develop loving kindness to all beings, to those that are dear to you, to those that are your enemies, to those to whom you are indifferent, without exception, not only to human beings, but to animals too, animals with two legs, animals with four legs, animals with uncountable number of legs, to beings in other planes of existence, higher beings, lower beings. And he explained how the fruit of developing kindness is a pleasant result. He explained what cause brings what result. He talked about his own development of loving kindness. He told his disciples, his followers, how even if they were being threatened to be sawn in half, by one of those saws, a man on each end, that if they, on that account, had hate in their heart, they would not be practicing his teaching. But he never said you must or you mustn't. He just told them what was true. Countless examples of the Buddha talking about loving kindness throughout his lifetime to different people in different situations.
Did he give any specific counsel or instructions about things to do, not just things to suffer, but things to do, like caring for the sick or...
Yes. He said that... Can anybody remember the quote that he said about he who helps the sick helps me? Is that right? Or something like that? My knowledge of the suttas is, you know, not good enough to give you accurate quotes, but he spent his whole life teaching people how to be kind, how to be compassionate, and how to understand, how to develop all forms of kusala for 45 years. He taught people the benefits of loving-kindness, too. How a person who develops loving-kindness sleeps well, wakes up feeling refreshed, is beloved by human beings, beloved by non-human beings. He also pointed out to people that loving-kindness isn't just a word. You don't just chant the Loving Kindness Sutta and think that therefore you have loving kindness. It's a reality which we can only get to know by practicing it in our daily life. Some people want to develop loving kindness by sitting down and closing their eyes and thinking about it. But they may not even know what kindness is if they have never been kind in their daily life. How can you develop the quality of loving kindness if you've never been kind, or if you've very rarely been kind? It has to be a reality for us in our actions and in our speech from day to day as we live. If we ever hope to make anything big of it, it has to start off naturally in daily life. And he didn't in any way try to force people to be kind, because that wouldn't have been kind. And it wouldn't have been possible. You can't push people into compassionate acts or force them to be kind. you can only develop your own loving kindness and perhaps help others to understand its value and its importance. And then only to the degree that you understand. Otherwise, you won't even know how to go about telling the other person how to talk to them, when to talk to them, what to say. Depending on how much we ourselves understand what kindness is, if it is only a word to us, then we can talk to children about it, but it won't sound very convincing. But it's true, we can help children. We can help anybody to be generous, to be kind. If we have kindness ourselves, it takes kindness to teach people how to be kind. Because we're doing people a favor when we teach them how to be kind. It's in their best interests to be kind. Everybody loses when you don't have metta. Because when you don't have metta, you have the opposite of metta. And what's the opposite of metta? And dosa is savagery, violence, in its grossest form. Whenever we don't have loving kindness, we have this. Perhaps I'm exaggerating because we might have lopa, we mightn't have this. We've got to be kind instead of wishing that everybody else was kind or thinking that everybody else should be kind or wondering why they're not kind.
Buddha was teaching all people.
Those who would listen.
Or not just a few adepts.
He taught those who had conditions to come and listen and remember. Listen and understand and remember and practice. He would not talk to people who did not come to learn. He kept quiet. Because some people came to argue. Some people came to complain. Some people came to tell tales. Some people came to show off. He didn't open his mouth. Even when he did open his mouth, he taught in different ways. When people asked him questions, sometimes he answered directly, sometimes he explained, sometimes he asked questions. Sometimes he just taught about sila, sometimes he talked in great detail about the six doorways. We read many times of people who came to him and he talked to them, and they didn't understand, and they didn't like what they heard. The only way we will ever be able to prove the Buddha's teachings is by beginning to practice them and see what happens. No other way. We cannot look at other people and tell if they have heard and understood and have tried to practice or not. While we may not always have objects to give or people to give objects to, while there may not always be opportunities to abstain or restrain oneself, there is never a moment goes by that awareness cannot arise. Hard to know the right place and the right time, hard to know what words to use, how to put it. Because we expect so much, we are so demanding. We want everybody else to benefit as much as we have so far, at least. Want them to understand as much as we feel we have so far, at least. And we often don't take into account the other person's accumulations. They might not be ready. They might not be in the slightest bit interested. We have to take into account our own limitations, too. We are far too pushy, forceful, insistent. Sometimes in talking to other people about Dhamma, we completely forget what our original purpose was, and instead of teaching, we end up sort of putting people down, trying to beat them, win an argument. When somebody doesn't understand, or when somebody has a strong view of his own that isn't right, it can be a condition for us to get quite hot, impatient. You tell him he's wrong. You don't understand. It's not like that. When somebody doesn't understand, that's not the time for us to get impatient or hot under the collar. That's the time for us to realize that at that moment, that person, because of accumulated moha, does not understand. At that moment, he may also have some aversion because of his accumulations of fear and anger and dislike, aversion over the lifetimes. He may have attachment. It's perfectly natural that people have attachment, and that they don't understand, and that they have aversion, and that they have their own views. It's not only those people, it's us people too. So it's loving kindness that helps one to present Dhamma in a gentle way without being pushy. And that's hard. So loving kindness ranges from helping people who are in trouble, say helping someone to cross, helping an old lady to cross the street, as is the standard example that we've heard so many times, to teaching Dhamma in a gentle, helpful, kind, patient way. Not expecting too much. We don't have kindness when we expect results, when we expect too much of someone. They should understand. Why? Because you say so? Because we teach so well? Because it's the truth? People should be kind. Why? Because we think so? Because it would be nice? It depends on conditions. You should give. You shouldn't say that. You should be kind. You mustn't do this, etc., etc. That isn't kindness. But that's us. Well, in reality, it's just different kinds of nama and rupa, and we can be aware of them, and that's the way. Because at each moment of awareness, is there or is there not kindness? At a moment of awareness of a reality of nama or rupa, at a moment of awareness of a characteristic, is there kindness? By me. Can satipatthana arise without loving kindness? Loving kindness is adosa. Adosa is one of the three wholesome roots. Adosa and alopa arise with all sopana cittas. Sometimes we have a moha as well, panya. So there's kindness when we give, even. We think of giving as being different from being kind, but it's kind to give, thoughtful, considerate. To think of somebody else's needs instead of your own, to realize what they need, to find a suitable gift, to go to the trouble to get it, prepare it, give it. That's kind. And it's kindness when we develop satipatthana. We're being kind to ourselves and kind to everybody else. Because every moment of satipatthana is a moment of understanding. Every moment of understanding, we are wearing away at our lack of understanding and our wrong understanding. We are making ourselves nicer people to be around. less conditions for us to commit agusala, less conditions for us to be opinionated, to be pushy, to be cruel, to be thoughtless. We're getting at the very root of things with Satipatthana. The very root of things, not just taking temporary measures, not just suppressing or avoiding, but getting to the very root of things, eradicating the ignorance that makes us perform the way we do, think, speak, and act the way we do. So that we will go on living, eating, sleeping, drinking, talking, but with less and less agusala. We may not notice it very much at first, but slowly our lives begin to change, our priorities change. What matters most in life after a while is different from what it used to be. We find more time for listening to Dhamma, for studying it, for thinking about it. We find that when we see nice things, we don't always immediately think of ourselves or ourselves only. We occasionally find that we are thinking in terms of how other people might benefit from the things we see that are nice things, that we hear that are nice, that we taste that are nice. Little by little. So when there is Satipatthana, there is kindness. We are doing the whole world a favor. We are removing a little bit of ignorance from the world. Just for one moment. But it has a tremendous effect in the long run. It accumulates. Until finally we completely eradicate all wrong view, doubt and wrong practice. And then we can never kill any single living being again. Ever. So that if it's our life or the life of a cockroach, we give in, we give up. I don't know if such a situation is possible, but we don't kill. We don't worry about ourselves so much anymore. It doesn't mean that we don't have longings, I just read out. Longing for parents, longings for children. But that longing would not ever bring about killing. So no killing, no stealing, no lying, etc. Do you remember once when I talked about how we can look at the five precepts as different types of gifts, different types of giving? Perhaps this is a good time to go over it again. Because when we don't kill, we're giving the gift of life. When we restrain ourselves, we are allowing the being, however big or small, that we were about to kill, to go on living. Kind. As it is now, we don't always do that. We sometimes don't let these beings go on living. Be it an ant, it's a being. It breathes. There is citta, cetasika, and rupa. And it doesn't want to experience pain or to die. So when we don't kill, we give the gift of life. People don't have to protect themselves. People don't have to be afraid to go anywhere. Afraid to be out in the dark, afraid to be in a strange place, a strange country. Afraid of strange-looking people with strange expressions on their faces, strange looks. Don't have to be frightened for your life. It's bad enough trying to get enough food to eat, let alone to have to worry about whether somebody's going to harm you in some way or kill you. I mean, when we keep the second precept, when we refrain from taking things which don't belong to us, it's a kind of giving. People don't have to worry about protecting their goods, about locking doors, buying safes, cupboards, putting fences up, having guards, putting things in the bank, filling in forms, etc., 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 remembering combination locks. When we keep the third precept, people don't have to worry about their wives and husbands, the people that they live with, their daughters. When we keep the fourth precept, people don't have to worry about making promises when we don't lie. And the fifth one, if we keep the fifth one, well, it's impossible to just about, or less likely that we would break the other four. So how kind it is to keep those precepts, and only a Sotabanna can. Only someone who has developed awareness moment by moment. So that's really the ultimate kindness, to develop Satipatthana. You couldn't be kinder, because if you don't develop Satipatthana, you can't keep the precepts completely. So what could be kinder than developing Satipatthana? Know the truth about oneself. Know things as they really are.
Damodaro Atwatplang, the 6th of October, 2518.
More ignorance. More wrong understanding. More attachment. And this will mean more unhappiness. So no matter how difficult we find it, what choice do we have? We either go forward, or we go with the rest of the world backwards and down. Even if we go forward only a little bit, it's much better than going backwards. If we understand how important it is to go forward, if we see the value of progress and the dangers of falling backwards, then perhaps there will be more conditions for us to study, to listen, to develop kusala, and to see progress taking place. From the beginning, it must be understanding, right understanding. But the only moment that we can progress, the one and the only moment ever in our whole life, is this moment. Because the moment, just a moment ago, has fallen away completely, completely. And the next moment after this moment hasn't arisen yet. The only reality is the citta of this moment. When we talk about nama, there is rupa too. But the only rupa we can know at this moment is the rupa which is the object of citta, if it is the object of citta. So we cannot know sound while we are seeing. Sound, there may be sounds while we are seeing, but we won't hear them. And if we don't hear them, we can't know them. We can't be attached to them, nor can we understand them, because they don't appear. So this is the only moment we ever have to progress, to learn, to begin to understand. If our understanding is very, very, very weak, then the little bit of understanding we may gain now will not be enough for us to see now the truth. But without accumulating one little bit now, the moment will never, ever come when wisdom is strong enough to know the truth. because there can be no shortcut. It is the same for every person in the world. We are all equally ignorant in this way. You mustn't get the wrong idea. We have different degrees of ignorance and different degrees of wisdom. But the way to develop more understanding is exactly the same for every living being that was ever born. To be aware of the reality that appears now in your life, whatever that reality may be. And nobody can accumulate wisdom faster than anybody else, because you can only do it one moment at a time. This moment. That's thinking, isn't it?
It is.
Let there be awareness of that thinking as thinking. There can be. And you don't know when it may happen. Let it be. Let there be awareness of that moment as thinking. Begin to understand that that thinking is thinking. It's not you, it's not a person, and it's not awareness either at that moment. It's not satipatthana. It's thinking. Satipatthana is a different moment. Satipatthana is the moment of knowing the characteristic of thinking. But at the moment of thinking, you don't know any characteristics, because you're thinking about an idea. The practice of satipatthana is the most subtle thing. Remember that the Buddha said on many occasions, this Dhamma is deep, deep, difficult, beyond just thinking. You cannot work it out just by thinking about it. It is impossible. Excuse me, I think you mean citta has difficulty in studying. If we know it is citta that has difficulty in studying, there will be less difficulty, less concern, discouragement, because there will be more awareness. We will know that it is because of conditions that there is this difficulty. And then immediately there will be less difficulty. When you have difficulty with your studies, aren't there moments of seeing as well? And at the moment of seeing, that's not the moment of having difficulty, because seeing is vipaka, having difficulty is cawana, probably dosa, frustrated, unhappy, discouraged, disappointed, or expecting too much. It might be lopa. There's lopa and dosa mixed up in frustration. You can't have the dosa without the lopa. Because you want something. You want to study, or you want to know, or you want to understand, or you want to have sati, or you want to have banya, or you don't want to feel the way you feel, or... But in between all these different moments of lopa and dosa, you can't tell me that there isn't any seeing. Or hearing. Or perhaps the experience of heat or hardness. And these are different moments. They're not the same reality. If there can be more awareness of different realities, instead of clinging to the discouragement, thinking on and on and on about how to study and whatever, big long story. Don't forget, there are those moments of seeing in between. And when we see, there are two realities of which we can be aware. There's the reality of the visible object, which is seen, and there is the seeing itself. They're both real. They are not ideas. They are not thoughts, concepts. They are paramatta dhammas. when you think you are, when you think about your difficulties in studying, you are carried away by the story, which isn't a reality. It's not a Paramattha Dhamma. It's a story about someone called Helen with a problem about something or other. At the moment of thinking about that, the thinking is the reality. But how can there be awareness of reality when there is so much attachment to the story? Do you want to be aware of the thinking as only thinking, or do you want to go on thinking about the story? You can't have it both ways. Because if you're aware of thinking, the story will be cut short right there. Won't it? But generally, the stories are important to us. We think about them with strong lopa, with some kind of strong agusala. The aim, of course, is not to be the brilliant scholar or excellent student, but to be aware. And when you are having difficulty with study, is that a moment for being aware, or is that a moment when we should not be aware? All moments are moments for awareness. All moments. Every moment. This moment. Because if we think some moments are better for awareness or more important for awareness, we have wrong understanding already, and then awareness cannot arise. We avoid certain areas of our life because we're trying to control. So we think at the moment of studying that what is most important is that we study. We don't see the value of satipatthana then because we want to study. We don't remember to be aware. We may have performed some deed and we think that wasn't very nice. Something we said, something we did. Instead of letting sati arise and be aware of the jitnamas and the rupas of those moments, we want to have a think about what we've done. Because we have such strong clinging to the idea of this self who can do nice things, good things, bad things. The only moment that matters is the moment of satipatthana that begins to see these different realities, these different characteristics, as characteristics, conditioned, not self. Otherwise we will cling to our constructive thinking like crazy. And we will live for constructive thinking. Nobody would deny that kusala citta is very valuable. And without a firm foundation of kusala cittas, how difficult for any kind of sati to arise and no characteristics. How very difficult. And if one has enough right understanding to begin to develop sati, how can that development proceed without kusala to support it? But what is kusala without sati? What is kusala without sati, without right understanding? It's just self, self, self. It may bring rebirth in a happy plane, but it will never bring understanding of realities, and it will never ever bring lokuttara citta. It's not whether or not you have kusala or agusala that matters. It's whether you have sati. Because a moment of sati that is aware of agusala is so much more valuable than any kusala without sati. So the person who has lots of kusala but no sati, what's the use ultimately? Whereas a person who has agusala and knows it with sati, Patana, wonderful. He's beginning to know the truth. To have kusala and not know it's kusala. To have kusala and know it's kusala. To have agusala and not know it is agusala. And to have agusala and to know it is agusala. These four are compared. And the Buddha said that it is to have kusala and know that it is kusala, and to have agusala and know that it is agusala, that is superior to just having kusala but not knowing that it's kusala, or having agusala and not knowing that it is agusala. It's the knowing that matters, not the kusala or the agusala. Beg your pardon? When you have kusala and you know that it is kusala, that means that you know it is citta, a type of paramattha dhamma which is not self. It doesn't mean to have kusala and know that you have kusala. It means to have kusala and to know that it is kusala. Not a person, not self, but kusala citta. Usually we have kusala and we don't know that it's kusala, we think it's me. I'm giving, I'm good, I'm happy, I, self, lasting, ignorance. And when we have agusala, it's the same. I have difficulty with my study. We really forget that it's citta. But if we have difficulty with our study and we know that it is agusala, that it is citta, that it is not self, that it is a type of reality arising because of conditions, this is satipatthana, this is the way. Who can stop realities from arising? Even the person with jhana cannot stop agusala when there is not jhana. After emerging from jhana, he can have different types of agusala citta immediately. For example, attachment to jhana. Nobody can stop it. But it is possible through having right understanding to be aware of it when it arises and know it as it is. And in beginning to know it as it is, one will gradually eliminate all that wrong understanding and the doubt, so that one will have lokuttara citta for the first time, reach the stage of being sotapanna, and then from that moment on there can be no return. Little by little, no matter how long it takes, the path will be followed and defilements will be little by little eradicated. But if one doesn't eradicate wrong understanding first, it can't happen. If one is always trying to get rid of attachment before realizing that attachment is a conditioned reality that can't be got rid of by trying, by pushing, by forcing, then it will never happen. Well, we are so impatient. We think strong attachment is ugly and therefore we want to get rid of it as fast as we can. Or we are upset by the unpleasant feeling that we have when we are angry and disappointed, and all we can think of is getting rid of the unpleasant feeling. No calmness, no detachment, to be able to see things more and more clearly as they are. Just impatience. And sometimes it can really overwhelm us. Don't want to study anymore. Go home. Chuck it. Go and find another method, another way. Sit down in the corner with our eyes closed. Anything but be aware of the reality. Anything but begin to understand. And if it does, it's just citta and there are conditions for it. And if we are aware, then we can carry on. We are attached to other things because of our accumulations of attachment over many, many lives. We cannot count how many lives. And because of this accumulation of attachment, instead of sati arising, attachment arises. And so strong accumulations for attachment, which we all have, means less accumulations of sati. So your answer, both your answers are right. We understand, or we think we understand, the value of sati, but still we do not seem to have very much sati. Is it because of not enough accumulations of sati? Yes. Is it because of too strong accumulations of attachment? Yes. They go together, they are the same. You see, when we say we understand the value, we think we do. But obviously we don't yet, really. And later on, if we practice in the right way, when sati and banya are more developed, then we will see that previously we didn't really understand. But how can we know at this moment how much we don't understand? We can't know how much understanding there must be developed. We can only know that which appears now. So we can know how much understanding we have developed so far, but we cannot know, we do not understand that understanding. So we think, oh yes, I know. I know what is kusala, I know the value of sati. because we really don't know it as well as it has to be known. It has to be, the value of sati has to be known more clearly than we know it yet. And it can be known, but never in a hurry. And at moments of patience, they are moments that can be moments of accumulating sati. But at moments of desire for awareness, at moments of trying to be aware of a particular object, to stare, to try and force, to try and be aware here, 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 it's all wrong. It's not natural. We do it all the time because we have these desires. We have wrong understanding. How can we say we don't have wrong understanding? We would have to be Sotabhanna to say, I have no wrong understanding. And we know ourselves what we are. So when there is wrong understanding, should we not be aware of it? It's real. Isn't it careless to be unaware? Because when we postpone it, that means unawareness, doesn't it? Postponing, postponing, postponing. Not wanting to be aware. Isn't it careless? Isn't it careless to have a gusala, careless to be unaware? When our aim in life is to develop awareness and understanding, every time we don't have awareness, we're being careless, forgetful. You can look at this word in another aspect, in the aspect of being overconfident, complacent, which also means careless. Carelessness happens through complacency and overconfidence. We think, everything's all right, I know, so bye. Now I understand, now I can be aware. I. Pamato, ting ting. Overconfident, complacent, and this is carelessness at the same moment. It is citta now, not a person. It doesn't matter what we think, we can think anything we like. But it's citta that's thinking. And every moment a different citta, arising because of different conditions and falling away. And we can't make any of these realities come back. You can't haul back your dosa citta seeker to have a look at it and see what caused it. It's gone completely. You worry about what you said, what you did. The citta that arose and conditioned your speech at that moment fell away such a long, long time ago. Can never ever be recalled or examined. You can only think about it. And when you think about it, you're probably thinking about it with remorse, with dosa and kukutta, worry. And we look forward to the results that we can expect in the future. Results for whom? If we have a moment of banya now, that we've been looking for, dying for, as soon as it arises, it'll fall away. What are you going to do with it when you get it? You can't keep it. So what's the point of looking forward to it and hoping and wishing? Because even when it comes, if it ever comes, it's not yours, it's gone. We should stop and think what we want to develop sati and banya for when we think about having a lot of sati, wanting to be aware for a long time or often or... What for? If we understand what sati is for, we won't be so greedy, so desperate to have sati. And then there will be more conditions for sati. Because it is our desire to be aware and to get somewhere that makes it so difficult for sati to arise. Because that's lopa. I want sati. What for? For yourself? What will you do with it when you get it? There's no you who can keep it. These realities arise and fall away. They have to be developed if we ever want to understand the truth, but the moment of understanding is just a moment, like all other moments. Conditioned reality arises and falls away. We can't show it to anybody else. We can't say, I'm a Sotabanna, look at me. It won't work. And even if it were true, how could people know for sure? Because you would still have dosa, still have lopa, anyway. Anyway, a Sotabanna wouldn't want to behave like that.